We are less than a month away from the biggest World Cup ever, right here in the United States, Canada, and Mexico. I'm Heath Pierce, former U.S. men's national team player with stops in the Bundesliga, MLS, Denmark, and Sweden. And I'm also the host of Orange Slices, sponsored by FanDuel Predicts. Orange Slices is the place to bring your World Cup memories to life. The people, the moments, and the stories that don't always make the highlight reel, but help shape everything we love about this game. Think of it as your soccer hang all summer long. Listen to Orange Slices wherever you get your podcasts.
What's good, Atlanta? This is the Blogging Dirty Podcast, where Dirty Bird is the word if you haven't heard. I'm your host, John Bueller, lead writer for FanSided. Got an exciting show for you guys today, but before we begin, be sure to hit that like button, smash that subscribe button, give this thing a five-star review on Apple, Spotify, YouTube, anywhere there's podcasts. It really helps the show grow. As of this morning, we're at 413 subscribers. Want to get to 420 here soon, 500 to infinity and beyond. A lot of stuff to talk about. It's going to be mostly a show based around the offensive side of the football. We're in the early to middle part of June, kind of a slow time for the sports world across the board. But, you know, I'm here. We're still here. So let's get it going here. I'm going to go with our first run of the day, with this being I saw that quote from Kevin Coger talking about Kyle Pitts. He holds himself to a higher standard, and I think that's great for the Atlanta Falcons. Yes, I don't know if it was Maria Taylor or Daniel Flick, but somebody who covers Atlanta Falcons media, they talked about they talked with Coker, the tight ends coach for the Falcons, about a play or a game that happened versus the Saints, towards the middle part of the year. I think it was like 6 weeks left to go. Pitts had to, make himself a better player. Coger is on record. He said, we sat down, we had to talk about things that we needed to do, that we can do better, that he can do better, that I can help him with. He was very self-aware and understanding of who he wants to be, what he needs to do. I mean, shortly thereafter, he had a great game versus the Seahawks. He did phenomenal things there on that Thursday night football game versus the Buccaneers. And Coger kind of continued. He said, it's just what he expects out of himself, what we expect out of him. He knew that he was below the bar and that we got to get him where he needs to be. He's also apparently very hard himself and has a great level of self-awareness. And I really appreciate that when we are discussing Kyle Pitts. This is a guy who's immensely talented, one of the best tight ends I've ever seen in college football, did extraordinary things at Florida. But you kind of see his personality. He's a little quiet. He's a little soft-spoken. He may come across as being aloof in some ways. And people may think, oh, he doesn't care. He cares a lot. He cares an absolute ton. And kind of from what I've gathered, I've covered his entire career here since he's been in Atlanta and dating back to his time at Florida. He really likes being here. He really likes playing with this team. He likes playing with this collection of guys. Why would you not? You're in the same offense with guys like Bijan Robinson, Drake London, and whoever you want to throw at quarterback. A lot of different guys at quarterback for him over his 5 years here. I think having Matt Ryan back in the building of his first quarterback is huge for him. Kind of reaffirms, maybe I want to be here. I want to be here long term. Obviously, this is going to be year six for Pitts out of Florida. As a Pro Bowler at 21, had a pretty good finish to 25, and then his middle 3 years were very much up and down. And we'll see what becomes of him, in the latter part of his prime. Will that be in Atlanta? Will that be somewhere else? I had a couple of notes kind of here based on, just thinking about the show coming up here. I think it just kind of shows how valuable Kevin Coker is to the staff. This is a guy that, it's a tight ends coach. But, it's a position group that's kind of overlooked in some ways. But when you have a mega talent like Pitts, it can be huge for them. It can be huge for your team. It also probably shows, how important Pitts is going to be for Stefanski. Stefanski, I believe, played safety at Penn, I think, but he kind of cut his teeth as an offensive-minded coach, you know, from the Gary Kubiak tree up in Minnesota before he became the Browns head coach. Whether he was with the Vikings, whether he was with the Browns, tight end was always very important to him. And I would expect that to be the same here in Atlanta. Not just because you have Pitts, not just because you have the head coach here, but because of who you have at quarterback. We know that Tua is an accurate passer. He's going to need to use the safety valve to kind of move the chains. And obviously, Pitts had a very strong connection with Penix. Pitts obviously went to Penix's wedding over the summer. So be that as it may. I kind of feel people dog on Pitts, mostly people who play fantasy football, whatever. I kind of empathize with him in a lot of ways. Immensely talented. You don't get to choose where you go in the NFL. You go to the Falcons. You get the pick before Ja'Marr Chase. Penei Sewell was a little bit after you. But there was a bunch of terrible picks in 2021. Again, it was the year right after COVID. So he comes in here. He gets to play for an all-time quarterback in Matt Ryan. And then, obviously, you have Marcus Mariota. You have Desmond Ridder. You have Taylor Heineke. You have Kirk Cousins. You have Michael Penix. Now you have Tua Tagovailoa. It's a mess. This is not the Matt Ryan era where he's going to start every game for 14 years. We never appreciated that enough in real time. I mean, me 36 going on 37, I can say that completely. I mean, I remember what happened at the end of Vic. I remember growing up with Chris Chandler being replaced, a bunch of other guys before, Bobby Hebert, Chris Miller, Jeff George. It's kind of nonsense, but that's kind of what this team is about. And look, none of the stuff that Koger said, none of the stuff that Pitts seems to echo, that's all great, but it has to happen on the field. If and when that does, then maybe we can turn, you know, those losses into wins and vice versa. Maybe we get a winning season for the first time in a very, very long time. Maybe we get back to the postseason for the first time, you know, since I've been a full-time employee here with Fansided and Minute Media. It's been a minute. It's been a long time. But you know what? I'm appreciative of this. This kind of makes me want to continue to root very hard for Pitts here in what will be a very critical season for him and the Atlanta Falcons. I wish him and the team nothing but the best. All right. And on that note, let's move on to our second run of the day. Drake London has reaffirmed every reason why he got that contract. He touched on it. You know, this was last week's episode of him getting that extension. He came to town. He met with the media. Anybody and everybody talked to him about it. Obviously, Ian Cunningham and Matt Ryan and Kevin Stefanski were jazzed to have him fired up. I remember listening to the press conference that Drake London had earlier in the week. He was saying, like, he kind of knew this was coming about 2 weeks out. He kind of deferred to his agent to make sure, you know, the I's get dotted, the T's get crossed and everything like that. But this is something that he wanted to do, and his representation kind of made that happen. I'm going to find this quote here from London real quick. He's like, I couldn't be happier to be here in Atlanta and staying here. Even though it's been different coaches, different teammates, different regimes, whatever it may have been, I'm still glad to be representing the Falcons. Apparently, he's 10th most in receiving yards in franchise history, only like 3 years in, which is great. And he finished with this. He said, they always ask, what do you play this game for? What's your reason? Well, one of my reasons is to be legendary, to be remembered. Hearing that I am 10th in receiving yards, it means that I'm in the right step. It means that my name might be up on a wall somewhere around the facility. I want at least my last name to live on as long as I possibly can. Whether that is in the history books here or wherever it might be, I want to live on for as long as I can to show that shows I take steps in the right direction. You know, he just wants to work as hard as he can to be the next Julio Jones. Look, we talk a lot about London's game. London's game is every bit, you know, Mike Evans, who unbelievable wide receiver for the Buccaneers, we've got to see in division up close for the better part of a decade, if not longer. What I like about this is when you give big money, when you give a big contract to somebody, you hope that they're a person of character. You hope that they're a person you can trust, you can lean on, you can build with. Because when you are giving them this money, that money's not going to somebody else. And especially with the NFL being a hard salary capped league, you can't afford to pay everybody. The pie may be growing, but not at the rate that it needs to. I mean, it's like inflation eating away at your paycheck, and this is the Blogging Dirty podcast. But even if the guy is good in character, a good moral fiber and everything like that, there's really another side of the coin here with this too that does give me a little bit of pause. he does seem to be feeling the pressure to live up to this contract. And this could go, you know, one of two ways. He could just rise above it and continue to be great, or it could kind of come back to haunt him potentially, like a lot of guys we've seen across town with the Atlanta Braves. Alex Anthopoulos, their GM, has paid a lot of players well before they hit free agency, because Anthopoulos doesn't really pay guys in free agency. He would much rather give guys like Spencer Strider, Michael Harris II, Austin Riley, like deals well before, you know, they reach that level of maturity. You know, you want to get some level of value here. It's all about value with him. And, you know, although Harris has really come on, he struggled after getting that big payday. Austin Riley is still struggling. Spencer Strider has not really been the same since he's had his slew of injuries here. The point I'm saying is, like, even if you have the best of intentions of paying somebody, it may not always work out. But I will say, from everything that you've seen out of Drake London up to this point, from being drafted out of USC in 22 to now, he's the type of player that you want to pay. Obviously, there's been a lot of chaos with the wide receiver market and draft picks since London got picked. I think he was the first wide receiver taken in that draft. The market's wild. It's a very interesting position group. I know some people are like, oh, he doesn't separate as well. He still makes plays. More importantly, I think when you are going to the building, when you're going into the office of Flyer Branch, you know, every day in the fall and whatever you can in the offseason, this is a guy that the team is, an organization is rallying behind. Next up seems like Bijan Robinson's going to be that guy, but obviously he plays the position of running back where you don't have as long of a shelf life. Who you pay matters, and how you pay them and when you do matters as well. So congratulations, Drake London, for getting that mega deal. I think everybody who covers this team, works for this team, loves this team, is very excited that he got paid. There may be a dissenting minority, and this may come back to haunt us at some point because this is the Falcons. But I'll just be completely honest with you. This, would you rather give it to like a lesser person? Like, would you rather pay somebody who may be a little bit more talented, who's a little bit more of a loose cannon? I don't know. We've done that before at Gunbird. Football's a crapshoot. It's a game of injury. It's a collision sport. It's a gladiator sport. It's a sport defined by violence. And you want guys who you want to go into battle with, and I want to go into battle with Drake London. That's why I name my fantasy teams when I do play London Calling, because why not? That ain't bad. In a different spot today. Don't have coffee. Obviously, recording in the base of my brother-in-law's house, with my sister's house. The dog's upstairs, and probably she's on a walk here. But let's get on the second half of the show today with some pass. I'm going to pass on this idea. I'm not so sure former Falcons running back Tyler Allgeier is as much of a trade candidate with the Arizona Cardinals as people expect or admit him to be. Benjamin Solak wrote about this for ESPN.com. And look, I'm not the biggest fan of what he does. I think he does a good job. Some of his stuff can be hit or miss here. But he wrote about, you know, because, you know, the Cardinals still have James Conner. They got Trey Benson. Oh, then they drafted, Jeremiah Love, number 3 overall out of Notre Dame. That's it for Allgeier. Arizona's going to be terrible. We're in a contract dispute with Jacoby Brissett at quarterback. You drafted Carson Beck. Depending on what happens with Brendan Sorsby's eligibility at Texas Tech, maybe he goes to the Valley of the Sun too. What I'm getting at is this is a new head coach. This is Mike LaFleur, Matt LaFleur's kid brother, coming over, and he's going to be in charge. And look, when you have a team that is not going to be good, let's be honest with ourselves how we view the Arizona Cardinals. If there are 8 teams in the NFL that are not going to make the playoffs next year, can you name 8 before the Cardinals? And again, depending on how you feel about the Falcons and what we're doing this year, maybe they're kind of borderline as well. But like, teams that are going to stink, Arizona is going to be at the top of the list. I mean, they're picking number 3 overall. Kyler Murray is now in Minneapolis. And then you got Jacoby Brissett here and Carson Beck at quarterback. And this is the other big thing here too, to keep in mind with Allgeier. I mean, like, this is a new staff. They want to prove themselves. You got to remember this. The Cardinals have fired a staff after one season. The Bidwell family is incredibly petty and confusing and dysfunctional. I mean, Steve Wilkes hasn't really been the same since he got let go. Josh Rosen, not the same. Cardinals will do a number on a lot of people. I haven't really seen Jonathan Gannon's name resurface. I don't know where he went. I think he's a good head coach. Maybe he gets another stab at this at some point down the line. When you have a team that is not expected to do much with an offensive-minded staff, you hope you can run the football. I could be speaking out of my tongue here, speaking out of the side of my neck here. Arizona might be halfway decent in the trenches. We'll see how that goes. But I would venture to guess if you don't necessarily have like a juggernaut at quarterback who can carry you, you're probably going to want to run the football. And even though Jeremiah Love was sensational in Notre Dame, again, this is a collision sport. This is a gladiator sport. This is a sport defined by regulated violence. And when you have that, you're one play away from your season changing. So Tyler Allgeier liked playing here. He wanted a bigger role, but he's like, oh, crap, I'm in the same team as Bijan Robinson. It's like, I got to leave LaDainian Tomlinson and be the Michael Turner that I need to be. Just the only problem is that instead of taking a quarterback at three, the Cardinals took a running back, and that threw a wrench in everything. I can't definitively say that the Cardinals are going to want to move on from an asset this quickly, particularly when Allgeier chose to go to Arizona. Like, there were other options out there, surely. I mean, he was a coveted free agent. He's a phenomenal player. Wish he was still here. And then obviously injuries may happen to other teams, and maybe he becomes available in some ways. I'm not going to say never, but like there's complexities to this. They are financially invested. To be straight with you, the Cardinals are more financially invested in Tyler Allgeier than the Atlanta Falcons ever were. I mean, he was like a day three pick out of BYU, walk on there. Got tremendous value out of him. Again, I wish he was still on the team. Maybe somebody else can get him. The Cardinals are screwy enough to trade him. Let's be real. That's who they are. But you also got to wonder, like, what does LaFleur and his staff want to do? If you have to remember, there were 9 other head coaches that were hired this offseason. And I think if you were to be honest with everybody and ask in power rank where you view every head coaching hire, if I'm going to remove Kevin Stefanski from the equation, I think the Ravens hiring Jesse Minter from the Chargers, that was a great hire. I'm not as sold on Clint Kubiak being the head coach of the Raiders because I don't necessarily think he has the personality to be a head coach. I do think Jeff Hafley could go one of two ways there in Miami, same with Robert Saleh in Tennessee. Not really high on John Harbaugh with the Giants or Mike McCarthy with the Steelers. I think Todd Monken with the Browns is going to be better than expected. But again, there have been head coaching hires that have happened before that I thought would be great, and they've come up empty. There have been ones that I thought were going to be terrible that turned out to be great. That's the beautiful thing. You got to watch the games happen. And that's what we got to do here with the Cardinals. We got to see what Mike LaFleur and his staff want to do. We also got to see what Allgeier wants to do. And hopefully they can all pull us together in the same direction. Again, he just signed there. Why would he want to leave? Anyway, let's get out of here with some pun. What am I not so sure about? It's obviously about the quarterback battle. Michael Penix Jr. has to be healthy for this to be a quarterback battle. Alex Van Pelt, the new quarterback coach, spoke to Mark Ramondi of ESPN.com, and he had this to say about the race. He says, it's tough to have a competition when both guys aren't competing at the same level right now. So it's hard. It'll come. It'll happen at some point. Mike's done a great job of getting himself to where he is right now. Really impressed to take 7-on-7 reps and go out and compete. That's been great. But really, there's no competition until we can actually evaluate him equally. He then continued by saying, we'll split the reps as evenly as we can throughout without Mike taking reps. It's a little lopsided towards Tua. Obviously, Tua is probably, you know, he's been in the league a little bit longer. Also, remember, Penix tore his ACL midway through last year. And that kind of gave way to Cousins playing a lot a year ago, you know, backing him up and filling in for him down the stretch. But this has been my thought the entire process with this. They're going to let it play out. This is going to be a storyline for us all offseason long. It's going to be so agonizing. And we'll see what happens. The most important thing for me here is, like, Look, if Penix is not fully healthy, then Tua needs to go. Tua needs to start. Because you don't want to put a guy out there who's physically not ready to play and ragdoll him. Otherwise, you know better than Luke Fickell and the Wisconsin Badgers. Throwing Billy Edwards Jr. out there versus his former team in Maryland, he plays, two drives and that's it. I mean, he played two quarters and two drives, and that's all he did at Wisconsin. I don't even know where he is now. I don't care. You also have to remember, you have a lot more invested in Penix than you do Tua. You use a number 8 overall pick on Penix. He's entering his third season of the league. At the end of this year, you have to decide if he gets that fifth-year option or not. Tua, the Dolphins are paying the bulk of his contract. Like, if he's getting paid 50-something million, we're paying one. He has every bit of stopgap. If Tua bridges the gap towards us, towards getting another quarterback next to her, if Penix proves to be the guy, we just need to get some clarity on the situation. And I appreciate Van Pelt coming in here, following along Stefanski, and being straightforward about this. Like, until they're both healthy, we can't actually evaluate this. It does seem like Tua's further along, but also Penix has brand equity here. Excuse me. There are people that he's been teammates with that, you know, went to his wedding. Bijan Robinson, Drake London, Jake Matthews, Jesse Bates III, Terry Fontenot is there. I mean, the list goes on and on. Tua just got here. And it's also very interesting for me because I write a lot about the Alabama Crimson Tide now. You know, you've got one of the greatest quarterbacks ever played for Nick Saban and one of the greatest players ever played for Kalen DeBoer Washington and Penix. It's a very interesting dichotomy I gotta navigate here. So I'll say this, wrap this up, and we'll get out of here as succinctly as I can because I will be writing about this on Bama Hammer, and you'll see this video embedded there too because why not? Because it's good. We got to see them both healthy. At that point, you can make a decision. Again, I operate under the same principle, the philosophy of the late U.S. General Norman Schwarzkopf. We got to fail fast. We got to know if something is going to be good or bad quickly. Because at that point, we can make a decision. The last thing you need in any sort of war tactics, sports, business, you got to know. Because as soon as you know, you can make the next decision. And hopefully you make a better one. Because when you're living in a world of like coulda, woulda, shoulda, uncertainty, confusion, it doesn't help anybody. You know, if it's clear, it's honest, and it's concise, you can all get on the same page much quicker. So at that point, here's kind of what I'm thinking. If push comes to shove and both players are equal, you got to go with Penix. You need to go with him over Tua if it's close. Because at that point, you get to build up chemistry with your players on your team that you already has some with. You get to find out very quickly, oh, maybe we do give him the fifth-year option, and we can go from there. And again, like, Tua is a value play. Obviously, if you can get a quarterback who's a veteran like him for a little over $1 million, you do that, especially in the backup sort of role. It remains to be seen how much of a mentor he will be, or even if that's really his role with this team. I think you do tell him and his agent he can win the job. But like, Tua's got to be markedly better to beat out Penix for this job, assuming Penix is healthy. If Penix is not healthy, then you got to go with Tua. If Penix is fully healthy and it's close, I think you got to go with Penix because if he stinks, then you can bench him. And if you bench him, then you could put Tua out there and try to get through the rest of the season and put your focus on drafting a guy in the first round in the 2027 draft. Because at that point, you'll have some level of clarity. But, like, you don't want to put Tua out there where it's close. He doesn't play well. Doesn't gel with the players. And then you put Penix out there and you come up a little bit short. And, again, you're leaving yourself a little bit more uncertainty there. We don't need that. We got to keep this thing on the tracks for once. We got to continue to build positively in the right direction for us to finally end our playoff drought. And you know what? Let's get out of here because this was episode 96 of the Blog and Dirty Podcast. You can follow me, John Bueller, on Twitter at X at Bueller118. You can follow along with the show on Twitter or the X at Blog and Dirty FS. You can, or at Blog and Dirty. Twitter, Blog and Dirty. YouTube blog and Dirty FS. Be sure to like, rate, listen, subscribe, review on Apple, Spotify, YouTube, anywhere this podcast. Give us a 5-star review. Again, blog and Dirty Bird Nation, you guys have been utterly fantastic. I appreciate all the subscribers. I like that you want to hear what I have to say about this team that you and I love for some reason. We got to keep pulling together for this. And even though I'm focusing mostly on the college side of things here, I do love talking about the team, you know, for 25 minutes or so each and every week. Once we hit the season, probably do it twice, and we'll keep building this thing out here. You know, tell your friends about the show. Tell you that John Buehler is so cool, and I love listening to him talk and ramble for half an hour. It's the best part of my day. Honestly, if I can make your day better, then that makes me feel good. That's what we're hoping for out here. Be the reason someone smiles every day. Once again, thanks for listening, and this is the Blogging Dirty Podcast.